Oops, excuse me. Good morning, everybody. I'm Adam Peake, and I'm chair of the Nominating Committee for 2011. Thank you very much for coming to this workshop. The goal this morning is to be as informative as we can about how the Nominating Committee, well, our process of work and our progress to date. Brief overview of what we'll be doing is to introduce the Nominating Committee and what we do, the positions that we're going to fill, how to apply the procedures that we have, and then basically go into a session of question and answers. And it will be concluding at around 10:30. There's an Adobe chat room for anybody who wishes to join it, and that is linked from the main agenda schedule of the ICANN website for this particular session. If you would go on to the next slide, Joette, then that would be fine. So this is the basic agenda that I've just covered. We will run through these issues, and the next slide would be good. Oops.
There we go.
So, the Nominating Committee. We're a committee that is somewhat independent of ICANN. We are 21 members appointed from throughout the various entities that constitute ICANN. We come from the GNSO constituencies, the at-large, the Security Advisory Committee, the ARSAC, the ASO, a very broad membership, and currently we are 21 members. Our job is over a three-year cycle to select half of the voting members of the ICANN Board of Directors and then a number of positions in the other leadership and policy-making councils. And many of you will recall that this was a process that was instituted to replace a direct election process that was used in the early part of the 2000s on one occasion to seat directors. The Nominating Committee is a replacement of that. Each year we try and improve our procedures, and expanding on the election process, we do, of course, have the positions for the GNSO, the CCNSO, and the ALAC that we also fill. We began our work this year. The Nominating Committee works from annual general meeting to annual general meeting, so the 2011 committee actually began at the final meeting of 2010 in Cartagena, where we began a meeting to plan out our work for the year and decide what our priorities our initial priorities would be. And we then begin a process which usually lasts about 4 months of recruitment. We began what we call our application form is called a statement of interest form, and we launched that on, I think it was December the 17th, is that correct? And the closing date for applications is April the 4th. So it's a period of just over 4 months. There's the very busy end of year period, which we don't expect very much to happen. But the usual path during this is that our 21-member committee, one of the reasons for its size is that we are meant to be using our networks to outreach to candidates to help build the best possible candidate pool from which we select. And that's worth making a note that the Nominating Committee is somewhat misnamed. We don't just nominate. We have a process first of recruitment, which, as I said, runs until April the 4th. And then we move on to a period when we're actually doing selection. So we are much more than a nominating committee. We recruit and then we select. And I should note that our decisions are final. And that is important in that we are independent of the ICANN organization, and we're independent of the organizations that send delegates to us. It mentions a URL on this slide at the bottom, nomcom.icann.org. That's a typical formula for ICANN websites, so you will find all the information that you may need leading from that particular URL. If you could go to the next slide, please. And these are the positions that we will be selecting for this year. It's two members of the ICANN Board of Directors, and they will serve two-year terms. All of these people will take their seats at the conclusion of the AGM of 2011. So that's when their period of office begins. We have three members of the at-large committee, and those are regional seats, so they have a requirement for either citizenship or for long-term domicile in that particular region. And the regions, the work we're selecting for is one person from Africa, one person from the Asia-Pacific Australia region, and one person from the Latin America and Caribbean regions, and those are two-year terms. We also select two members of the GNSO, the Generic Name Supporting Organization. Those are also two-year terms, and one member of the Country Code Names Supporting Organization, and that is another three-year term. So overall, we have eight positions to fill this year. As I've mentioned, the deadline for this particular process is April the 4th. Moving on to the issues that we look at, and this is something that we'd be particularly interested in both this morning and during a meeting we have this afternoon, which is a roundtable meeting. It's another NOMCOM meeting you'll find on the agenda, which we hope will be much more interactive. This is supposed to be more of an information session. These are the selection criteria that we look at as the base criteria for the work that we're doing. They're essentially taken broadly from the ICANN board bylaws as they apply to board of director positions, and they're the sort of the most basic criteria that we're looking for. And I think there's some very obvious ones here. Excuse me. integrity, objectivity, intelligence, of course, sound judgment. And I think the important thing for anybody who's involved in ICANN is going to be the ability for thoughtful group decision-making. You don't want people who are going to be particularly awkward all the time. We do need people who understand the notion of consensus and willingness to work with people, and a desire to work with people, I think, is important. Understanding the ICANN mission and commitment to the ICANN model of participative governance, and I think that really means a commitment to the notion of multi-stakeholderism, of trying to find, as we've talked about, consensus across the different stakeholders who are involved in this organization. A familiarity with aspects of the internet, and we do have some technical basis. ICANN is a technical coordination body. We do not ask that everybody understands every aspect of how the internet works, but a basic understanding of how email perhaps passes through the system, a very basic understanding so that people are not completely lost when they come into this environment and hear all the different terms thrown around. But you do not have to be a technologist to serve on these councils, and very often we're not looking for technologists. Could be with people with strong skills in consumer organizations, for example, or development and policy that, as it affects developing countries, for example. Technical skills are, of course, useful. So it's a broad range of ability that we wish for. You have to be willing to serve as a volunteer without compensation. Expenses are reimbursed, travel, accommodation, and a per diem, but you're not going to be paid for your work. And I think this is one of the strongest things, that when you look around the councils that are holding their meetings over the course of this week, or the board of directors, these are people who are volunteering probably at least one day a week of their time throughout the year. These are positions are extremely hard work, and we should not underestimate the contribution that the volunteers make. And it does make the nominating committee task quite difficult, because you are asking for people to devote a great deal of time, and we're extremely appreciative of that, as, of course, I think the whole community is. The volunteer work that goes into ICANN is quite incredible. And then the ability to work and communicate in English. We're seeing an increasing amount of translation going on. A great many of the documents are published in English. You've a lot to read, so strong English language skills are important. those who have other languages and can bring those skills into ICANN are also extremely valuable, but for the people who are doing the policy development work, a strong understanding of English is vital. And something we've put at the bottom, and this is something that I think this committee feels very strongly about, is that we want to reflect the internet's, community, the internet community's cultural, gender, geographic diversity. An example from last year, my colleague, my advisor, Wolfgang Kleinwächter, was the chair of the nominating committee last year. I know they did an incredible job to get 82 candidates to submit statements of interest, but only four of those were from women. He was able to select an excellent board of director from that, so quite a high success rate, one out of four, but we really do need more women applying to this process. It's a very difficult thing to do, and we're trying to learn how to do that, but we think gender diversity is important. Cultural diversity, of course, is important. ICANN has made an enormous commitment to travelling around the world, to bringing people from different parts of the region, parts of the globe, into its process. But at the moment, in terms of diversity, my personal concern, so I won't speak for the whole committee, but my personal concern is for gender diversity. ICANN, as an international organisation, needs to be more balanced. The next slide, please. And this is how we proceed from here. For anybody who wishes to submit a statement of interest or expression of interest, as it's written here, that is the application form, and you can find that link from the nominating committee website. The direct link for that is nomcomican.org, so that usual formula plus/apply. And we have an email address where anybody can send questions. The other thing that we have that is extremely important is the notion of being able to recommend other people. And we do have a process for that. Instead of nomcomican.org apply, it's nomcomican.org/suggest. And we very strongly encourage people to suggest people they think will have the skills necessary for these different types of positions. It can be an anonymous process if you wish. We hope not too many people will suggest Mickey Mouse or Bill Clinton, for that matter. Not that I think he's a Disney character. But we do need serious applications and serious thought from that. And I think in the ICANN community, everybody probably knows somebody who could bring great strengths and skills into this work. And so that suggest process is important to us and something that we're pushing particularly hard this year. With that, I would like to take the opportunity to introduce two people who are very important. Jacqueline Morris is my associate chair and someone who helps the committee move along and do its work. And Wolfgang Kleinwächter, who was the chair of the 2010 nominating committee and is appointed and helps as my advisor and has done a great job in that particular area. And we have a lot of the members of the nominating committee here in the room at the moment, so I think a majority of people in the room are nominating committee members, so thank you to everybody who's not. Hello, Olga, hello. And it's very, very good to see you here. I know there's a lot going on and shifting agenda items, but thank you very much for coming. So with that, I think it's probably a good idea to move along and see if we have any questions to begin, how we can expand on to describe how we go about the work that we do, perhaps you're interested in our selection processes, and we can see how we go from there. So if anybody has any comments from the floor, then Olga, please. We're being audio cast, so if you could take a microphone to do that, that would be great.
Thank you, Adam. Would you let us know other dates after April the 4th? Say someone submits a statement of interest, then which would be the relevant dates that he or she should have in mind in the case that they are being selected or just put into the pool of possible candidates?
Okay. So the process after April the 4th is that we begin our assessment process, and there are a number of stages to this. we try to make sure that candidates are aware that they are kept in mind at all stages. But for different positions, we do actually ask for a management consultant to conduct interviews with certain candidates when we want to get more information about them. This is a process that costs money, so we don't always ask for all candidates to be interviewed. Certainly, if it's somebody that we know extremely well, we may not think that it's necessary to spend what is perhaps $2,000 for an interview with somebody that we probably feel we know better than the management consultant would be able to get information for. So if a candidate is not interviewed, that does not mean necessarily that they haven't made it through that stage. Our process from April to June is to assess and try and learn about the candidates in our pool. We divide up into groups of teams who will dig down into candidates by looking at the references in detail. There's a useful way of Google search, of course, but search generally. Bing also works, and Yahoo. We can, we look as best we can into finding out the backgrounds of people. And then during the June meeting, which in this case is Singapore, at the end of the June meeting, we will hold a selection meeting. That's where we make our selections, and people start to hear if they've been selected or not shortly after that. We will make an announcement in September. I'm aware that one of the criticisms or comments about NomComs over the year is that candidates feel as though they've been left in something of a black box. You can apply, for example, in early December, as soon as we begin this process of releasing the statement of interest, the application, and perhaps not hear back until September. And we will make sure that that doesn't happen. We're trying to have a few blog posts to give examples of what we're doing at the current time. And I will write to candidates at some point just to say, this is what's going on at the moment, to try and keep people a little bit better informed. But we are very concerned about confidentiality. We try to retain we make a promise that we won't release candidate names. We do not release who is in the pool. So we defend that confidentiality very closely. So there's a strong sort of... It's very difficult to contact candidates at certain times, but we will try to do our best this year. I think something that I missed from the presentation is also we mentioned that the nominating committee itself, a large committee, one of the reasons for that is so that we have a large network to draw on in terms of candidates. And we're also with people who are quite experienced in ICANN, so we can go around the various constituencies and ask for their help. One thing that we're doing this year is we're also using a recruiting agency, a management recruiting agency called Otgers Bergstein. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. They're based in Brussels, and they are an agency that is experienced in recruiting ICANN staff. This is a very different role for them because they're asking to find volunteers who will do a lot of work, and that is not a normal role for a management consultant. But this is something that people have commented on over many years, should you use a recruiter or not. So we're running an experiment this year to try and do that. And we're going to see, and of course we'll announce the success of that towards the end of the year when I am required to write a report on what's happened during the year. So we'll see if a management recruiter can actually help this process of finding volunteers for ICANN. You may have different ideas about whether it will be good or bad, and we'll let you know. At the moment, we don't know. We think that experimentation in all these processes is a good thing. If it works, superb. If it doesn't, we don't do it next year. Thank you. Any thoughts?
Adam mentioned that sometimes candidates feel like in a black box after they have applied, and then so there's a feeling, okay, something is going on behind the scene and they are not fully informed. There was a discussion always in the public sometimes that the NomCom is some mysterious committee, where there's a conspiracy behind closed doors and things like that. So this is really nonsense. So according to the statutes, the NOMCOM works on the basis of the principle of confidentiality. But the principle of confidentiality is an instrument to protect the candidate. There is a fundamental difference between an election process and a selection process. In an election process, you are campaigning. It's a public campaign. You try to attract, you know, your constituencies or voters or whatever. And so this is a fight. And at the end of the elections, you have a winner and you have a loser. In the NOMCOM selection process, there are no losers. Because nobody knows that you have applied for the job. So it means in case you are not selected, nobody will know this. It's the only exception if you yourself disclose it to others. Then they will ask, do you have been selected, yes or no? And then you have to answer no or yes or whatever. But the confidentiality principle is a principle which protects the candidate. So it means because there are numbers of reasons why a very good candidate, a very excellent candidate, is not selected at the end of the process because he does not fit in the very specific constellation, the balance of the board. The balance of the board changes year by year. We have outgoing directors, incoming directors. So, and the task of the NOMCOM is always to look in the annual balance and then to say what is missing. So that means while you are probably not contribute to the balance in year A with an outgoing director, suddenly you are needed in the year B or C. So insofar, you know, it's not a question if you are not selected, whether you are skilled or not skilled, or the NOMCOM treats you badly, or you are not qualified. It's a very delicate process where we have to keep the balance and it's not against the candidate. Insofar, our basic principle is that we say, we should be as open as possible and transparent with regard to the process. So you should understand the procedure, the various steps from outreach to evaluation and then the deep diving and interviews and all this, that you should know the steps. But we will not disclose, you know, the details around the candidates. So, and I think this is really important to understand, to remove this myth which is going around that the NOMCOM is something, you know, mysterious in the background of ICANN, which makes decisions and, you know, kicks out members of the board and brings in new members of the board and nobody knows really why and what is the reason for that. If you go back to the bylaws, you will understand it very quickly why this is, and as Adam has said, the NOMCOM is the most democratic element in the whole ICANN structure because it's the constituencies themselves who select their leading personnel. That's really direct democracy, participatory democracy. And you have not all ICANN bodies here which follow this principle.
Olaf, it looks like you may have a remote access.
Indeed, we do. We got a remote access question from the chat room, and more precisely from Siranush Vardanyan. Well, hope I pronounce it right. He asks, can the lack of technical background be the criteria for not selecting the candidate? And it comes from Siranush Vardanyan, Republic of Armenia. And no. My apologies, I almost got a slap on my fingers. It's not he, it's she.
She. Thank you very, very much. It's very good to hear from a lady. Thank you. An understanding of ICANN is important. An understanding of the basics of the DNS, of how it works, is important because you do have to understand. Over time, you're going to have to have an understanding of how a registrar functions or a registry functions. You're going to have to know what the difference between those are. But that's not a very difficult thing to learn. The level of understanding, that basic level of understanding, is not difficult to learn. So, no, not having a technical background will not prevent you from being selected. There are people... I think you can look at the current board members and you can say there are people who do, most clearly do not have a technical background. There are lawyers, there are people who've been members of parliament, there are people who've been in the foreign service of their governments, there have been, you know, international bankers, people who... So, no, but they have done a great job once they've come into ICANN of ensuring they understand the industry that they're working in. So there's a self-education process once you arrive, not necessarily before you come. Although it's a good idea to have just checked a little bit on probably something Wikipedia or a slightly more authoritative source to make sure you do have the basic understandings of the domain name system and how it functions. Vanda, please.
I guess it's important for the interest person asking for Armenia that what is important is the life experience they have, the how they can deal with the community. There is some kind of a language that is important to talk here. One is community language. Second is technical language. The third is political language. And then the fourth is really the govern language. If you are able to speak one of those languages, so you can apply. So from my point of view, it's quite important to make sure that the person has large experience. How many language they speak, the better the candidate is. But it's not necessary to speak all the language. Thank you.
Just a quick follow-up thinking about, as we've had someone from a remote access, somebody who is a female, and we hope you will consider being a candidate. I don't know at the moment, but we currently have 42 applicants. And usually we are looking for, the tradition has been a pool between 70 to 80. So we're on target, we're a little bit concerned, and one of our concerns is that so far two of the 42 are female. So we're almost exactly on target for what happened last year in 2010 when there were 82 candidates and four female. So we're pushing a little bit hard still for improving our gender balance in this area. Olga.
One question and one comment. Question is if someone could apply for two of the positions that were showed in the PowerPoint. Is that possible? How someone could state that in the statement of interest? That's the question. And then the comment.
Yes, you can. What we have is a list of those four positions that we mentioned, and you can prioritize. So if your first choice is the at-large, then you would put one by at-large, two by CCNSO, three by board of directors, four by, I've forgotten what I didn't just say, board.
GNSO,
thanks. And then what is very helpful to us, if you really are interested in two positions, let's say the board and the GNSO, is actually to write something in your statement of interest that reflects slightly both those interests. You know, you'd write a general statement, but if I'm selected for the board, I think my skills are X. If I'm selected for the GNSO, then I would bring in Y. And that is very helpful to us because it helps us to understand more, you know, why you think you're qualified for both or why a person believes they're qualified for both. So, yes, there is a way to prioritize and show your interest in more than one position.
Thank you, Adam. And this is the comment. I am Olga Cavalli. I am a non-com appointee to the GNSO. I was appointed in 2007 and reappointed in 2009. And this is my fourth year in the GNSO. One thing that I have felt being a non-com appointee is a strong support and relationship with the non-com in the selection process, which was really very good for me. I remember Adam making some in interviews during the ICANN meetings that I was participating, and also Wolfgang and other members. That was really very, very good. But then once you're appointed, my feeling is that you don't have the way to give feedback about your experience to the non-com. I am not sure if this is if it's you guys, the people who I should talk this about. Maybe you don't have the resources to do this feedback or receiving some comments from non-com appointees, but I think it could be useful to... I have said this in private to some of you, but I wanted to state this in this meeting because I think it could be useful to have some feedback from the experience of the appointees and get some comments from them, and perhaps that could help improving the process and not only the selection process, but the, how the appointee feels once it's appointed, but because then you feel like you're there and kind of lost at the beginning. Then you get accustomed, but it's kind of the process is cut in a moment. That's my comment. Thank you.
Yeah, perhaps others would from the committee would like to comment as well. I think it's very valid. It's something that we've heard, particularly from people who join, for example, the CCNSO or the GNSO, where there are quite complicated structures where people are members of constituencies. You can feel a little bit like, where do I fit in, I think. The feedback idea is very good, and perhaps we should consider part of the nominating committee process during the year would be to have a meeting with all current NOMCOM appointees and just sit down and say, how are things going? So perhaps we can note that as a suggestion for improving the nominating committee, as we come together. So thank you. It's not because we don't have time. It's just because often you don't think about it. One other point, though, is that the nominating committee refreshes each year. We are appointed on a yearly basis, so we don't really have an institutional memory. And in fact, we are actually asked to wipe all of the sort of knowledge you have, best you can, of someone who applied in a previous year, so that you try to reassess them fresh each year. And so there is a sort of process of renewal each year, so sometimes we perhaps forget that we should be looking after you better. But, you know, we're not the committee that appointed you, for example.
Hi, Sintra Suttanan. I'm from the Trinidad and Tobago Computer Society, which is an ALS in La Crallo. For many Caribbean ALSs, we are minority in La Crallo, so it's difficult for us to be voted. And I understand gender is one of your criteria, but do you also take into account those kind of issues in terms of regions?
I think it would be one of the criteria we would look at. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, what we're looking at really is a great balance of things. You don't pick one particular thing over the other, but it may be the thing that would push us in the end towards one candidate over another. I'm not going to say all things being equal, but, you know, if you have a couple of candidates who maybe... that's when those sorts of criteria come in. And particularly if a region like the Caribbean or the Pacific Islands, small island developing states generally, then you may start to look for that kind of merit in there. And also it's something that we might look for when we're recruiting. We may start when we're discussing as the nominating committee, can we find people from a particular region that we feel has been unrepresented? And that's very difficult, but we will try to do that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, it's a sort of, we're looking for the best possible candidates, and those criteria of something like what you've just mentioned will be one factor, but not the single deciding factor.
And there's also one tiny thing with that. With regard to the at-large in particular, the timing of the elections makes it difficult because... You may have at the time when the NOMCOM is making its decision a lovely balance, and then by the time it's appointed, they've had their election, and the whole thing goes skewed. But you can't predict that sort of thing necessarily. Yeah.
So, okay, I understand what you're saying, Jacqueline, but just going back to your point, so it really depends on the, let's say, sensitivities of the current NOMCOM there, to really understand these kind of needs and, you know, the situation.
Yes, exactly. And what we, you know, one of the things we try to do is go around, for example, the at-large meetings and take some input on these kinds of issues. And I think it's up to us as a committee to. It's part of doing a good job is that we have to try and be aware of this type of issue. Jacqueline's quite right about the election process for the other supporting organisations and including the board. Usually most of those positions are decided around June so that when we're making our selections, we can use the balance that we see in the GNSO or the new board members that will be seated in June. That means we can take that into account. But there is something with the at-large process that I think is a little bit out of sync at the moment, which makes it a little bit difficult for that organisation.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Wilfried Weber, and for the second year in a row on the nomination committee, so for the last time on this committee for a while, I guess. Quite a few things have already been touched upon, but I think we should emphasise the fact that we should distribute the fact to the community that this selection process is just a very interesting multi-parameter optimization process. That's a little bit of technical and mathematical lingo. That's where I'm coming from, so apologies for this choice of words. Because there are many different things which play into this whole system. First of all, there are structural restrictions, like people have to, or for some positions, not everyone, is eligible because of this geographic diversity thingy. The second thing is that a couple of processes are developing in parallel. So, for example, a particular individual may apply for a position by way of the NOMCOM, and at the same time there is a parallel path to the same position by way of a different supporting organization. There is sometimes the situation that a candidate wants to or has to withdraw for whatever reason. So this is sort of a dynamic process, and my feeling here is that it's the responsibility of the nomination committee as a group, as a whole body, sort of to track that development during the time of the mandate, and at the end to come up with the best solution. And as we, I think this is not disclosing something which should remain confidential. As we had it in the last year, we even had to do our job more or less up to the last minute. So more or less up to half an hour before the announcement, because there were still things going on which sort of pulled out the carpet under our feet. Although we had thought that we did the job as best as we could by a couple of months before that, we had to do, we had to do sort of very consistent time-dependent things up to the very last minute. And I think this is important for the community to understand that while we definitely try to be as open as possible regarding the procedures and where we are, we have to be very restrictive with some regards, like announcing what the results are or where we are in particular with, for example, a particular post, a special role. So sorry for probably restating some stuff that was said already, but I think this is something coming from the left or from the right or from top to understand that it's interesting, but sometimes it's really difficult at the same time.
Just a looming concern that people may have that since we're this year using on an experimental basis a recruiter to provide, to help us out in parallel with the normal SY application process. Perhaps it's worthwhile to say a few words, Adam, about how we ensure that all the applications are treated in an equitable manner, regardless if they're prompted by a recruiter or come voluntarily otherwise.
Thank you. Thank you, Olaf. That is, what we're doing is essentially a blind process. So as we've already described, it's anybody from anywhere can put in a statement of interest, and the recruiter will do the same thing. They will encourage the person that they've found to submit a statement of interest, and they will send me the name of that person so that I have a track of it. None of the nominating committee members will know, so that we treat those people equally with any other. And of course, being a recruitment agency and a professional process, there is a monetary reward involved here. They don't do this for free. So we're being very careful to make sure that I know what's going on, but there's no favoritism or disfavoritism, if that's just to make up a word, because why not? So that we wouldn't, because you can imagine that if they give us so many candidates, their fee will increase by a certain amount. So there might be a temptation for the nominating committee to keep them one beneath that threshold to save that money. We're going to make sure that I'm the only person who knows what's going on. And as I'm a non-voting member as the chair, it builds in some safeguards so that both the recruiter, it has a fair process, and all the candidates have a fair process. And then at the end of the year, when I write up the report, I will tell the nominating committee before, but when we come to the end of the year in the report, I will let people know how this process has worked, how we think it can be improved, whether it should be used again, and so on. But we've thought quite carefully about protecting candidates and also doing a good professional job here. One of the things I'd like to go back to is something that Wolfgang was touching on, and this is the notion of confidentiality. And this is a survey I'm going to continue later in the year. I remember probably 4 or 5 years ago, George Sadowski, who was then the chair of the nominating committee, wrote to all of the successful candidates who'd been appointed by the nominating committee and said, had there been a public list of candidates, would you have applied? I.e., if we were publishing the candidate list we have now, all those 42 names, would you have even bothered to apply to that process? And at least, I think it was just over one third of the people who'd successfully been appointed by the nominating committee said no. So I'm going to do that survey again, but I think it's worth doing to make sure that we know that we're doing things the right way, that protecting confidentiality really is important to candidates. Some people wouldn't mind having a public list, but I think there are enough people and probably enough cultural sensitivities that we have to keep the candidate names private, and that is also something that we can perhaps publish later in the year so that people can get a better understanding of why we do some of the things that we do. Any more questions or thoughts on what we're discussing? The main thing for us at the moment is to ask everybody here to think about either becoming a candidate or thinking about who you know who could help ICANN. There is a tendency also to apply for the board of directors, which I have to emphasize is the most difficult job in ICANN. It's attractive. But I think it was of the 82 candidates last year, it was over 50 who only wished to apply for the director positions, which leaves you with 30 to fill those remaining extremely important positions. The GNSO, the CCNSO, the ALAC, that's where the policy is being developed. The policy is taken from there to the board. And if we have good policy, then the board's role has to do less work, and we have a better functioning ICANN. So we really do need people to think about, working for the GNSO. It's not a second-class position. It's the meat of where, ICANN's work is. The CCNSO is exactly the same. This is how our country codes work. This is how the internet functions. and the ALAC is representing consumer interests across every aspect of ICANN's work, whether it's recommendations on IPv6 or on the new GTLDs. So this is an extremely important area that, you know, to consider, that it's not just the directors. So if you know people who are good policy development people, good policy development experts, then we could really do with bringing them into the GNSO and the CCNSO, consumer experts, people who love consumer issues. Let's try and bring them into the at-large and not just into the directors. Important, though, of course, the directors are.
Yes, I'm sorry I came in late. So I'm Steve Metallitz with the intellectual property constituency. So if my question has already been asked and answered, I apologize. But this came up in our meeting, IPC meeting yesterday, so I wanted to get your thoughts on it. In filling these important slots for the GNSO Council, question has arisen about relationship of candidates to existing constituencies or stakeholder groups within the council. So I guess I'd have two questions, one at a very general level. Does the nominating committee take into account whether a candidate is already eligible for or participating in an existing constituency with or stakeholder group within the council? Is that a factor for the nominating committee? And second, more specifically, what would be the nominating committee's approach to a candidate who is or who becomes an employee of a contracted party to ICANN? In other words, an employee of a registry or registrar. Would that person be eligible to be appointed by the nominating committee to the GNSO Council? And if appointed, would that person be eligible to remain in service? Thank you.
The first part of your question is one that has been considered from NOMCOM since they first, you know, since the process was first implemented, and it's the notion really of a dual path. And I think when the nominating committee was first put in place, it was more of a concern, because the process was new and our job, or I shouldn't say our, it was considered that the nominating committee should very much look outside of ICANN, try to bring fresh faces in, because that was really the process it was reflecting in terms of the election that had previously been held. I think it's less of a concern now. People who have skills in ICANN and wish to come into the organizer, wish to come through the NOMCOM path, it's perfectly acceptable. That you contribute to a constituency with a history of contribution to a particular constituency can be viewed as a very positive thing. The fact that you might have run in 12 elections and never been selected by your constituency may throw a doubt in our minds, as you can imagine. Yeah, I'm giving an extreme example. But no, having volunteered for ICANN most definitely is a positive, not a negative. Would somebody be eligible if they start? I think we do not have a bylaws or issue against that. There's nothing that says we cannot appoint, and there is no recall mechanism if they suddenly change their job. It would be something that we'd probably be concerned about. Because we're beginning to try and understand what the contracted, non-contracted business, non-commercial, and then the complicated issue in the GNSO of that sort of the person who sits between the two houses. We're trying to understand that, and one of the reasons we have 7 members of the committee appointed from the GNSO is so that they can bring that understanding to us of, you know, how should we be functioning in regard to the GNSO complex structures and changing structures. Wolfgang. Yeah.
May I add something, because this is a more basic question which relates not only to the GNSO Council but also to the board and other positions, because the NOMCOM was designed to create balance in the various structures. So it should not be used by members who have a strong affiliation to a certain constituencies as a second chance to get to a position. So that means while, for instance, I give you one example, the CNSO councils and two members to the board. And we had some applications from CCTLD managers who were unable to get the board seat via the CNSO Council and wanted to do it via the NOMCOM. I think this is not the basic task of the NOMCOM, to give people who cannot make its way to a council or a board via their regular constituency to use the NOMCOM as a second chance. So there are always exceptions because you have to treat it case by case and very individually. But, you know, if with regard to your very concrete questions in the GNSO Council, I think one general philosophical challenge for the NOMCOM is to bring additional value to the GNSO Council and not to duplicate knowledge which is already in the Council. This is the guideline.
Okay. Well, I'm hearing two different things. I first heard that affiliation or volunteering with via constituency is a positive, and then I heard Wolfgang say that strong affiliation with an existing constituency is a negative. So I'm confused.
Be clear, it does not contradict. Certainly, you know, everybody in ICANN has an affiliation to a certain constituencies. What I wanted to say, make clear, that this should not be misused as a chance to get to a position. You know, if you failed on one way, then you try the other way. So, but, you know, it would be totally senseless to send somebody to a council who has no affiliation to existing constituencies, because then he has not the knowledge. So these are two sides of the coin,
okay,
and it's not a contradiction.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Before Wilfried says something, case by case, weighting of how much interest there is and so on and so forth, it very much depends, but it's certainly not a disqualifier, and that's important.
Thank you
very much.
Yeah, and I think almost everyone here in this room knows about the fact already, but sort of to put it in context to the question that we just heard, throughout the structure of ICANN, there are mechanisms to deal with these situations that there might be an interest in something, there might be an ongoing formal or informal affiliation with some activity, with somebody, with some organization. And throughout ICANN, there are mechanisms to manage that. So that even applies to being on the nomination committee. That also applies to contributing, for example, to a review team. There is this mechanism throughout ICANN where you have to think about potential conflicts of interest and where you have to document those in case there is any. And sort of from that point of view, I think we do have both the mechanisms to deal with sort of interesting cases, let's put it that way. And at the same way, I guess everyone on the nomination committee will look at the situation on candidate-by-candidate base and also by for which position this individual may be considered. Because it might be sort of an interesting case putting this individual or offering a particular position to a particular individual, but if there is an alternative for another position, it might not be an issue at all. So I think we are in good shape, and I guess everyone is actually aware of the of this situation and of this potential interesting situation or issue. Back to you, Adam.
And conflicts of interest, particularly for the board, change and emerge over time. I mean, you can imagine with all the GTLD process going on at the moment, we have to be quite careful how we're thinking about certain issues. We have not discussed as a committee yet what we think some of the more important criteria are for conflicts of interest. We'll be doing that as we finish the recruitment process by the end of April. But this is something that I think the constituency generally can give advice on. You know, warnings that you think would be problematic. We want to hear from people. It doesn't mean we're going to accept every piece of advice that we receive, but we really want to try and understand the situation that we are creating for ICANN, really, in some ways. We want to understand what are the challenges that ICANN is facing now and over the next 2 to 3 years. Because that's the impact of the people that we'll be selecting, who will be taking their positions in at the end of the annual general meeting this year. So we do have to be sensitive to a lot of different sort of potential conflict of interest issues. We have to think about what's best in quite a long term, particularly for the board members. I think you've all probably heard that, well, We begin our recruitment process in Cartagena, which was December of last year. The people don't take their seat until the following year. The board is such a complex operation that you're not going to be a very wonderfully effective board member, although actually we're seeing some very effective new board members already. Usually it takes 6, 9, perhaps a bit longer months to get ready to be an effective board member. So when we're thinking about skill sets to bring into the board, we're looking quite far ahead. We're trying to make some predictions here. So thoughts that the community has on ICANN's future challenges are very useful to us. And I'm told time is up. It's 10:30, so thank you very much. And sorry if there haven't been any more questions. We do have a round table this afternoon. That is intended to be very much listening to different parts of the community about two main things. One is, how can the nominating committee improve its processes? How can we be more open? What aspects do you want to know more about? And then this issue of what are the challenges that ICAM is facing as a community, and how can we best select candidates to meet those challenges. And with that, thank you very much.
In this room.
Next one. Yeah, okay. 2 o'clock, round table. 2 o'clock.